B-Pod Studios.
This is the home of the game. And these guys, Toucher and Rich, on Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Fred, hello.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
What's going on? Are we on fire?
People need to chillax.
Mike Francesa appears to rip fought while ripping Adam Gase.
I love meatballs.
Do you?
Let's go Red Sox.
Hit me like a bomb, bomb, bomb.
Go Red Sox.
Hit me like a bomb, bomb, bomb.
Wall dick, well, yeah.
She made out with my dad.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Get this week stuck out of here.
The Sports Hub, Toucher and Rich. The Thursday morning before the long holiday weekend. Just about at the end of your summer. Because once you get by Labor Day, it's all downhill. I think we can all agree with that. So we have maybe 4 or 5 days left of summer. And then we actually have to turn our attention to serious things. Good morning. Fred and Rich off today. John Wallach, Joe Murray, Mike Lockhart here. 6 to 10 for your dining and dancing pleasure, 617-779-0985. Lots to get to today. Patriots news, Celtics play later today. Bruins post-mortem as Bruce Cassidy held his breakup press conference yesterday. But first and foremost, Joe and I were talking right before we went on the air. And we talked, what was it, Wednesday? No, Tuesday, about the Forest closing down next to TD Garden and what a terrible thing it is. And you know, the Forest is an institution, been there over 40 years. And apparently the pandemic slash recession slash whatever has cost Boston yet another great bar on Boylston Street. The Poorhouse, I found out last night, is closing. That's awful. I mean, all of us, I think everyone on this show has been to the Poorhouse multiple times for one reason or another. And Joe, you brought up a good point. What is that neighborhood going to look like? I mean, there have been bars closing left and right all over the place. I mean, all of us remember going to that place. We were talking about Dylan's next to the fire station there. Bukowski right around the corner next to the bowling alley, next to King's. I mean, what is the landscape of Boston going to look like in the next 4 or 5 years after all of these institutions have closed?
Yeah, I don't even know if there's a reason to even go out that way anymore. You know, like, you know, so the reason why I still go to that area every once in a while is because there's a little Stevie's. It's open till like 4 a.m. if you need like a slice of pizza or whatever.
Sure.
That's really the only reason why I'm out in that area. But yeah, if you want to go out, or especially after like a Sox game or a concert.
All the places that we're used to going are no longer there. It's sad, really, in a way. At McGreevy's, right. Another one. I mean, it boils
to... Didn't Whiskey's close, too?
Yeah.
Whiskey's close,
that's
too.
That's right.
Oh, as Mark Wahlberg called it, Whiskey Steakhouse?
Of course, Whiskey Steakhouse. Mm-hmm. Don't start.
The Poorhouse was sold, so we don't know yet if there's going to be new owners or somebody else.
It's not going to be the same.
No.
It's not going to be the same at all. Even if they kept it open with the exact same setup, under new management, it's not going to be the same. I mean, part of the reason you went there was the people. I don't understand what's happening. I mean, can we have nice things? Can we just have nice things?
You don't understand stuff that what's happening? They can't afford the rent.
No, I get that. I'm just saying, I'm waiting for something to break right.
Well,
I'm waiting for some good news.
How about that?
Something good to happen for everybody.
How about that Fenway area, though? Like, I drove over there, and I'm like, what the hell is... What, remember Remy's or Tony C's, whatever the hell it is.
It was Remy's.
I'm like,
and then
I'm like, what's this Saw ZZ place or whatever?
I know.
I don't even know what's around. If I wanted to go out now, like in that area, I don't even know what's what.
There's one place that I go to in the Fenway now. And by the way, it was Remy's. Now it's Tony C's for one reason or another. But in the end, there's one place I go to, and it's for good barbecue. I don't know. Is Sweet Cheeks still open?
Sweet Cheeks is
good. Okay.
Good.
Oh, yeah. Sweet Cheeks is so good. You go, and you don't realize the volume of food you're eating until you get out of there and want to go to sleep. That's when you know you've eaten well,
yeah.
Is that you feel like passing out and going to sleep in your car on the way back from eating at that place.
Well,
that's
Thornton's
the only place
there.
I
that's
go.
That's all I care.
What's that?
Thornton's Bar and Grill is still there on
yep.
Peterborough.
That's
the hidden gem of the neighborhood.
I heard Eastern Standard could be in trouble.
Really?
That's a great
place
restaurant
right yeah.
there. That's been there for a while. I mean, I know there's, what's that burger place that's right there?
Tasty Burger?
Tasty, but like,
yeah,
that's the really only good. Place that you that's can, like, get into around there if there's not a line.
Right.
I mean,
you know?
But, I mean, now you have to check the paper. And when those don't really exist anymore.
The paper?
You have to check online. How old am I? You have to check
Grandpa.
Online. Got the little ink in your fingers. You have to check online to see if your favorite place is still open.
Right.
I mean, people, these places are getting picked off left and right. It's sad.
Yeah. I have to say, as someone who lived on Peterborough for like 5 years, that neighborhood is way better now than it used to be.
Yes, I remember
it used
that.
To be Burger King and McDonald's.
I know.
And,
yeah.
like
and you'd get out of Fenway homes. And you're like, I'm not going two blocks off Boylston.
It was like
I'm
that,
staying right where I am.
You know, the scene of the town, right?
Yeah, right there.
The McDonald's and the Burger King and like the old Hojo's. Whatever that is. What
that's
is it
the
now?
Verb or something now.
Yeah, the verb. Well, I mean, something else now.
Interesting story about Hojo's, and this was brought up recently because people were revisiting the plans for the new Fenway Park. Remember that? And they were going to knock down the Hojo's. They were going to knock everything down. And I'll never forget this because, you know, ownership had made an offer to the people who own the Howard Johnson's. So like, okay, we're going to give you what we think is fair price. We want the land. And the owner of at the time of the Howard Johnson's was like, you know what? We had planned on renovating the place. This is how much it would be worth now. They jacked the price so far up, the Red Sox are like, it's even too expensive for us. We can't do that. And but are there Howard Johnson's anymore anywhere?
Oh, I don't know.
No. I used to go to the one at Blue Hills. That was the jam, man.
I mean, there used to be every rest stop used to have a Howard Johnson's. I know the one near Lexington where I grew up had a Howard Johnson's for the longest time.
There used to be one in Natick right on Route 9.
Oh, is that right? I had no idea.
I have been told Eastern Standard is closed along with Oyster Spot.
Jesus. That goes back to what I was saying. Can't we just have one thing? One thing we all like that we can still go to and not have to worry about it.
I mean, Cheers closed. Cheers is closing.
I only went there once.
No, I wouldn't go, but at least like it's like, yeah, that's Cheers.
It was back when the show was still going, and I'm like, all right, I live in Boston. I might as well go and see what it looks like. And, of course, it looks nothing like the television show when you go in there, but it just I never went there.
Hang on, the one in Faneuil Hall, the Bull and Finch was the one modeled after the show.
Right.
Yeah, Cheers. I'm talking about the one next to the Common. That's the one I went to.
I think what Joe's referring to, forgive me if I'm wrong, but it's the Cheers at Faneuil Hall.
Oh, okay.
So they opened up another, you know, a replica inside Faneuil Hall. That is what's closed.
Okay.
Here's the thing about all of these places, guys. They sort of depend on people to come back on a regular basis in terms of trying to stay afloat and to stay alive, and I don't think that's been happening lately.
No, I get it. It's not that I don't understand what's going on. It's just I wish that we would stop the losing streak. That's all.
Gotcha.
Just one time. I would just like one piece of good news.
Check the paper, John.
I know.
might start having to, though.
When is that going to happen? When? Like, when do we get good news? When do we go to a place and it's still open? When does that happen? Someone please tell me. Well, what's the place in Brighton that just closed? That had all those great craft beers.
Sunset Grill?
Yeah.
Dude, they called it something else.
That's closed too, right? I mean, I think it is. I think it's closed too.
That Sunset Grill, that place, Anna's Taqueria, the one on Beacon Hill, I think just went down.
There is no good news anywhere. I mean, you were saying, Dan, you know, people, these places require business and, you know, people,
sure.
I understand people don't go out for obvious reasons, but when we do go out, now we have nowhere to go.
Yes, but if you could put your finger on perhaps the last time you were in any of those places that you're referring to, they probably would come back and say, it would be nice if maybe you stopped by within the last 10 years.
The Fours was a spot.
Gotcha, Joe.
That
yes.
if I'm going to an event,
that's
meet
where you
me
go.
At the Fours.
Yeah.
Like, that was like a, hey, I'm over at the floor.
By the way, that was like a kick in the nuts.
Rich was saying, oh, I only went upstairs. I'm sorry. I was upstairs maybe twice in 30 years or however long it was.
I've only been up there a couple of times.
I didn't take the elevator upstairs.
They're like, you want the elevator? I'm like,
no,
yeah.
I don't want the elevator. I want to stay downstairs where the bar is and maybe have food at the tables on the far side. That's where I went. Who goes upstairs at the Fours? Upstairs at the Fours?
One of my local establishments that had my name on a bar chair.
Nice.
Doyle's in Jamaica Plain.
How about that?
Went under. Well, they sold, but anyways, it was just sad. That's like now when I go back home, it's like where do I go?
You know, we don't have a
spot to go anymore.
There's nowhere to go.
Is Cappy still around?
Cappy's, yes. Unfortunately, it is. I think. I'm Fox Finest right there.
I know.
Surprised Mike knew that one.
I used to work in Dedham. We used to go there when we'd be like hiding for an hour and a half for lunch.
Oh, nice.
Dude, nobody would find you there. Yeah, right?
617-779-0985. If you have a place that you wish was open and isn't, feel free to call in. But we got a lot to get to. We got Patriots news to get into. What happened last night is next. Coming up on the program, the 7 o'clock hour is a must-listen. We have the Bankroll Boys at 7 o'clock. The always excitable Dan Lifschatz is going to be in studio, right? We have that confirmed. Yes. Dan Lifschatz is going to be in studio here with my buddy Joe, and we're going to talk some gambling at 7 o'clock, and then at 7:20, we're going to pit Bankroll Boy against Bankroll Boy and see which is the best. Who is the best Bankroll Boy of them all? I'm sure if Dan loses, he'll take that line down. I'm sure that if and when Dan loses to you, Joe, I'm sure he'll be just fine with that. 8 o'clock, Jim McBride of the Boston Globe, beat writer for the Patriots for the Boston Globe, will talk about all the news surrounding the Patriots, and then coming up at 9, Celtics will play late this afternoon, against Toronto. They lead 2-0. Game 3 in the bubble in Orlando starting at 5:30. Kyle Draper of NBC Sports Boston will join us as well. Lots to get to. What happened last night is next. It's Wallach, it's Murray in for Fred and Rich on a Thursday on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is not your conventional sports radio show.
It's become painfully clear.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Recapping what you missed, it's Toucher and Rich.
Town Fair Tire Studios, Thursday edition of the Toucher and Rich program. John Wallach, Joe Murray sitting in both today and tomorrow. Actually, we're going to have Ted Johnson tomorrow, so it'll be Ted, myself, and Joe tomorrow. Mike Lockhart is here as well. 617-779-0985. If you have bar stories, that's great. But until we hear from you, we're going to talk about what happened last night. And there's a lot to get to. It starts with the Patriots. A very surprising move by Bill Belichick yesterday. Mohamed Sanu has been released. He was considered one of the guys who was going to start opposite Julian Edelman this coming season. And less than 2 weeks before game one of the season, he is now a free agent. And before he made the announcement official, Bill Belichick seemed to foreshadow things when asked about his wide receiving core yesterday.
More than the physical skill set, really, is the position that the receivers play. So, you know, we have outside receivers, we have inside receivers, and then, you know, receivers that can, let's say, play both or have some combination of skills that where they can play both spots. So all three are important. I mean, some guys can be outside only, some guys can be inside only, some guys can have that flexibility. In the end, I think it's really more about production and performance, although, you know, size and skill set plays a part in that as well. So, you know, they are related, but, you know, really the most important thing is to be productive.
All right. He said it there. Mohamed Sanu was not productive. He was hurt, but it doesn't matter. If you can't stay on the field or when you're on the field, you can't produce, you have no place on an NFL roster, let alone the Patriots. I'm going to break my arm and pat myself on the back. I hated this deal when it happened. Mohamed Sanu was mediocre at best. Yeah, big, strong, whatever. He was given single coverage most of the time he was in Atlanta because he was opposite one of the best wide receivers on the planet, Julio Jones. When not having Julio Jones on the other side of him, he could not break free. He could not get open. He had one good game And in reality, 10 catches for 81 yards, really not all that good for a wide receiver.
It was in a loss, right?
Yeah, and how many drops did he have? How many drops did he have while he was here? The Patriots gave Atlanta a second-round pick for a mediocre wide receiver, and it's a receiver they had less than a year. They made that trade in October of last year. He was not on this roster for 1 year. And there, you might as well have lit the second-round pick on fire. A horrible deal that I didn't like when it happened, and now it's just proven to be a gigantic bust. And I heard the argument last night on TV and on social media. Well, Tom Brady wanted weapons. He wanted weapons. The only thing Mohamed Sanu was experienced. He wasn't necessarily good. I mean, he's one of those guys, you drop him in a hat of like 30 or 40 other wide receivers, and he's as good as those guys. But the thing is, with the 30 and 40 other wide receivers, you don't have to spend a second-round pick to bring them in. They could have traded for anybody, and they traded for this guy who did not work out, isn't very good, and once again, now the Patriots are screwed.
Well, in hindsight, the second-round picks, it's a bad move. Yeah. Emmanuel Sanders was on the table. And
fifth-rounder, by the way.
That's right. And
I would take Emmanuel Sanders 50 times out of 50 over Mohamed Sanu. That guy plays hurt. He's tough. He fights for it. He's great. And doesn't drop the ball three out of every five times he's thrown it.
But what happened there? Like he was linked. I know I think he had more years, was that it was, on his contract. I forget.
He's in New Orleans now, so it must have been the end of his deal.
And then Sanu had the extra year, so maybe that's why it was more there. Here's the deal with Sanu. Is he an inside guy or an outside guy? He's too slow outside, and he can't catch. He's not dependable catching the football inside.
He's too slow inside. So, I mean, that's the thing Mike Reese went out of his way to say. He can't play the slot.
But the drops, like, that's the issue. If you're going to play inside and be slow, at least have good hands. He didn't have that. He had size. I will say this, though. This is a little different here, but Cam Newton was working with this guy. Like, they were working together. They were doing all these videos together. So this might be the first time where, you know, they release a guy that maybe Cam liked, that maybe had a little chemistry. I know.
He worked with Edelman.
But what I'm saying is, Cam has no sway. Maybe that Cam liked.
Cam just got here 5 minutes ago,
and now it's the Patriot way. It's like, well, that was my guy. I liked him. So I'm interested to see how Cam maybe feels about this or anything that he says about it.
I think Cam's just happy to have a job and be the starting quarterback for a team. I mean, he wasn't going to start for anybody, and Belichick rode to his rescue. I don't think he has any sway over this whatsoever. But ultimately, and it's interesting, I was reading Mike Reese after it happened. Reese was of the mind that Sanu was the fourth wide receiver on this team. At best.
Yeah.
And what, Damir Bird was third?
Yeah.
That's a guy who was without a job, too. And the reason Bird is third is because he's really fast. I mean, forget the skill set. That guy wasn't very good in Arizona. He's your third wide receiver. And you look at the talent that the Patriots have at the position. And if you're not a believer in N'Keal Harry, I happen to be, but if you're not a believer in N'Keal Harry, the talent on this team and the speed of the wide receiver position is bad, and they still wouldn't hang on to him. They have salary cap money to burn. They have one of the lowest payrolls in the league. This guy would have cost you $6-7 million, and they still got rid of him. $6-7 million against the cap room that the Patriots have is a small dent, and they still didn't want to deal with it.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, I'm looking at our lads. N'Keal Harry, Julian Edelman, Damir Bird, Jacoby Myers, Gunnar Olszewski, Jeff Thomas?
A little thin here.
Devin Ross?
Yeah.
Like, to who?
It's not good company. They're going to have to use James White a lot as a wide receiver this year.
Well, I don't know about that. I think, ultimately, it looks like Belichick is going out of his way to make this roster like the roster that Newton had when he was in Carolina, minus the great tight end. He's gone out of his way to say, you know what, Cam? We're going to use the power running game. That's all you did when you were in Carolina. Just hand the ball off to Damian Harris or throw the ball to James White out of the backfield, or if Sony Michel is healthy, hand the ball to him, and we're going to hope the blocking holds up. And if you want to run the football, by all means, but we're going to run it 30 times and throw it 25 times.
Couldn't agree with you more. That's what I thought was going to happen anyway. Even before they signed Cam Newton, I thought they'd go pretty run heavy with Stidham. I think they're going to grind out a lot of clock and then try and win it with defense. A lot of under this year for the Patriots, I think.
Okay. And the other thing, too, is Lamar Miller is working his way back. That's a guy that when he's actually in the backfield, like when Michelle's in the backfield, right, do you really see him as a threat catching the football? Lamar Miller can do that. And so I think maybe they're going to lean on him. He just got off the pup list.
I don't know if he makes the team, though.
Oh, see, I do.
See, you get if it's you pretty, have Michelle,
it's pretty crowded.
White,
if Michelle is healthy, all those guys that Mike was just saying, I mean, Lamar Miller was good. What, 2, 3, 4
yeah,
years
he hasn't
ago?
Played in 2 years,
and I don't. I think Mike's right.
All right, we'll find out. I think that's a guy though that can at least be a dual threat. They don't have a guy that can run between the tackles and catch the football.
Harris can.
Well, think.
Well, we don't know, really.
Well, we've seen.
We saw it in Alabama. Right. Has he done it? You know, we believe, Mike. Yeah. We believe. It's just we got to sell it to everybody
right.
else.
All right. In other running back news, it was thought that the Patriots are going to make a run at Leonard Fournette, and apparently they did their due diligence on him, but ultimately he winds up going to Tampa Bay. And if his grievance against Tampa is accepted and he wins, he could make upwards of $6-7 million for Tampa Bay this year. If not, I think it's a base of $2 million with $1.5 million more in incentives. So he goes to Tampa Bay, and let's be honest, I thought this last night, guys, I thought Tampa Bay needed Leonard Fournette a lot more than the Patriots do. I mean, you look at the Tampa Bay running back depth chart. Ronald Jones, I don't know, from a fantasy perspective, he was okay.
What, I hate
700,
Ronald Jones.
I know that, but 700 yards and 6 touchdowns and spot duty. I guess that's all right.
Soft as hell, that guy.
Yeah, and then LeSean McCoy, who's washed up and blown dry. Yeah. He's the backup. So Tom
Brady.
They also
have a rookie who is pretty good, but Bruce Arians never uses rookie running backs.
Okay.
And when David Johnson was there, he could barely get on the field. And he was scoring touchdowns every time he touched the ball.
Okay, so now Tampa Bay, with really nothing to speak of at running back, I'm sure Tom Brady got in Bruce Arians' ear and said, please go get this guy so I don't have to be responsible for everything. So Leonard Fournette goes to Tampa. I think he will succeed there. And the Patriots, you might say there's no star power at running back, and Sony Michel is hurt a lot, but their running back depth chart is better than Tampa Bay's. I think Tampa desperately needed a running back, and they would have outbid the Patriots regardless.
So it ended up being a 1 year. I think he got $3 million.
Yeah.
I don't think so. The Patriots had the first shot. That's really what this comes down to. The Patriots had the first shot. Fournette met with the Patriots first. They had a good conversation. He went somewhere else. He went to Tampa Bay and boom, signed.
Yeah.
I think he saw it as a better offer. Right? I mean, you got a better
More playing time.
Yep. And Mike, you put this in the thing last night, but I don't know, Leonard Fournette's played in some pretty big games in college, maybe not in the NFL, but I mean, he's been in AFC championship games.
Yeah, he caught 76 passes last year. That's the crazy stat. So, I mean, he's definitely got value in passing and running game.
And what was your point about the Super Bowl? Who's more likely to win the Super Bowl, Patriots or Bucks? Was that your take? Did you have that? I thought you said that maybe. Somebody said
no,
this.
No, my point last night when we were emailing back and forth was Tampa Bay is probably going to go deeper in the playoffs
there you
than
go.
The Patriots.
I don't want to take takes from anybody.
No, no.
I don't want to take away a take, okay? We've been firing takes the last few days here, you know?
You're very much your own man with takes. Believe me, you're very much your own man with takes.
That's a great question. Who's more likely to go on a deeper run? And listen, Tampa Bay is New Orleans in their division.
I know.
So Leonard Fournette going up against the Saints twice a year, I like that. That's interesting to me. But just one last thing. I know we got to hit the headlines here, but I think Lamar Jackson's another Miller. Miller's another guy to bring up here because maybe he is healthy. And maybe they think they're better off with him. And one last thing about Mohamed Sanu. It killed me to see him as a punt returner. Like,
oh,
it killed me.
Yeah.
Out. Like, no more. That was the worst.
Yeah.
Forget about catching the football. Him returning the football, terrible.
I wanted him to throw some passes.
It would have been made more of an impact if he had done that. 617-779-0985. We'll get into the Bruins, and Bruce Cassidy held his postseason press conference yesterday, and we got to get into the NBA playoffs because Joey Cash over there is hot. He is hot about the refereeing in last night's NBA playoff games. Celtics play tonight as well. We'll get to that in a minute. It is Wallach. It is Murray. It is Lockhart. In for Fred and Rich on a Thursday here on 98.5 The Sport.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911, and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Now, more Touch Your Rich. Touch Your Rich. On 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Toucher and Rich for Thursday. John Wallach, Joe Murray, Mike Lockhart here until 10 o'clock. 617-779-0985 if you want to call in. Bruins, as we all know by now, out of the playoffs, bounced in five games by the Tampa Bay Lightning in round two of the NHL playoffs. And yesterday it was Bruce Cassidy's time to kind of reflect upon what has happened. Cassidy more than happy to be out of the playoff bubble and did the Zoom conference call from his home. He was more than happy to be home, but now he has to answer all the questions. What happened? Now that you have perspective, what do you think happened? And Cassidy was saying, you know, there's a lot of blame to go around.
I needed to do better with our lineup, attack a different way against that team, obviously. We certainly didn't want to change our game a lot because we are a good team, but we didn't do enough to win and to finish plays, to score, and at the end, defensively. I mean, the last two goals, game five is a good example. They scored two deflection goals. Heart and soul of our team is our team defense, net front coverage. They exposed us on that. So not only is it the scoring part, it's the part of our bread and butter game that broke down as well.
And you heard him mention the last two goals and the problems that the Bruins were having. Those goals, if I remember correctly, were at even strength. And all through the series against Tampa Bay, the special teams are great. The Bruins were able to kill off penalties. They were able to score on the power play. But 5-on-5, they really, really struggled.
Offensively, we've said 5-on-5, how do we generate more offense? We need to get our D involved more. Does that sacrifice defense? We have to have an honest conversation about that. And those, that's where I think we are with our team. I think our special teams are solid. You know, I think we've got, you know, good pieces in place, young and old. We're just going to have to tweak a few things.
Sounds like he's happy about the near future, and we're going to get to that in a second. But the bigger question was, what was the problem with David Pastrnak, and how is Andre Kasha? And according to Cassidy yesterday, neither of those two guys were at top speed.
I know that Pasta had a lower body injury, played through the whole playoffs. You could see he wasn't at top speed. Obviously missing time, him and Kasha, you know, their conditioning level wasn't where it needed to be, you know, to stand the rigors of that. And that was a bit of circumstance. Typically, you have the whole year to build that up. If you miss a bit at the start, you didn't have that luxury this year.
All right, so now the big question surrounding the Bruins, and we've batted this around on this program and other programs on this radio station, where do you go from here? Is the Bruins window closed, or is it closing? Do you have another year, or do you junk it all and retool, and hopefully you get another whack at it in 2 or 3 years before everyone is completely aged out? And Bruce Cassidy was asked about this and decided to dodge the question completely.
The reality is, as every team gets a year older, you know, there's an effect on the team. And for us, I think every summer, Donnie would tell you, when we sit down, go over our team, we're always trying to get bigger, faster, stronger, better. It's just the way it is. And does that mean moving out younger guys, older guys, middle of the road guys? Well, there's always that discussion. So we'll have that again. And I'm not trying to evade your question. A couple of the older guys, a couple of the core guys, are free agents. So, you know, there's decisions to be made by the player and by management.
Well, Bruce, actually, that's exactly what you were doing. You were doing a very good job of evading the question. So no one's really quite sure, I guess, in the Bruins organization what they're going to do yet. I guess, you know, it's too fresh a wound and you have to let it heal a little bit. But as we said before, fellas, Don Sweeney and Cam Neely, and they have to sit down and decide what the next 5 years of this franchise is going to look like. And I continue to believe that this is it for this core group. Tampa Bay is younger, faster, better, and their core group is signed for longer. And we had Billy Jaffe on the program yesterday, and he was saying, well, you don't necessarily, you know, bring guys in to match up with Tampa Bay. You just try and get better in general. And my point back to him, and it continues to be, you have to make acquisitions. You have to be better than a team you're going to bump up against for the next 3 or 4 years. It'd be different if Tampa was in the West and you didn't have to worry about them. You got to play Tampa, what, 4 or 5 times a season, and then play them again in the playoffs every single year. And you got to get by them in order to get to where you need to go. Forget about Washington and the other division. Forget about the other teams. Just to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, you're going to have to beat Tampa Bay. So you got to go get guys that match up well with that team. I don't know how the Bruins get faster. That's the problem. I don't know how they get faster.
Unless it's Char off the ice.
Maybe.
That's the only thing I can think of.
But I mean, this team's in a world of hurt when they play this team, not only next year, but for the years to come.
Well, so here's my thing. There's a bunch of things I actually love to get to that Cassidy said, but just to pick up on what you're saying, isn't it time to let Cassidy's guys play? Like, he's drafted so many guys. They've had the opportunities.
Sweeney.
And what I mean by that is, like, the Lausannes of the world. Like, let the... I know it doesn't look
Sudnika,
pretty.
Sudnika, Vakanainen, Zboril.
You might have to start putting them into the lineup. Maybe you play them. Maybe you get. That's how you get faster, maybe. Maybe they play well, and they're worth something at the at the trade deadline in the middle of the season or something to that degree. But, you know, the Jake DeBrusk restricted free agency, like, that's going to be interesting. You know, are there teams maybe that want to bid on him, and do they want to move on from a guy like him? He's a third liner to me.
On a good team, I agree.
He's a third liner. Here, it's, you know.
Kasha, too, by the way, is a third liner.
So this is where I wanted to get on this.
Rich and I got into it a couple of days ago about Kasha. They got Kasha just because they wanted to get rid of Backes' contract. If you look at Kasha, Kasha has one 20-goal season. He had 7 goals this year. Total. I mean, that's not a second-line right winger.
Yeah, and I'll say this. Someone threw out what was worse, the Bruins first-round pick for Kasha or the Mohamed Sanu second-round pick. It's still Sanu. It will always be.
You gave yourself cap flexibility by getting rid exactly. of Backes, and I don't care who they got back from Anaheim. Not even a comparison.
Yeah, he's back. Like, I think he'll be all right. I think he'll be okay. But I just wanted to bring this up. A while back, I mentioned I knew some stuff regarding David Pastrnak.
Oh, yes.
It got leaked out. So it came out yesterday. It was actually his agent who mentioned it. But Cassidy said it as well. They were unfit to play, him and Kasha, and they basically weren't ready to go. And Cassidy admitted that. And what happened was is that Pastrnak came into contact with someone who had COVID and then was skating at a Malden rink. And, you know. Then he had to go away again for that.
Any chance they deal him, do you think, in a Sagan type thing?
Yeah. Not a chance.
Like a monumental deal.
No.
And like I said, the only guy that could, it's Marchand, and I don't think you should do that.
No, I don't either.
Do you remember, I mean, you guys have all been around here for a while. The Bruins were looking for a sniper for 20 years, and one fell into your lap. Yeah. You got him at the end of the first round, and here he is. This is one of the best goal scorers on the planet. He plays for your team, and you have him signed for a contract that pays him, what, $6.66 million a year for the next 4 years? How much money is Ovechkin making? I mean, how much money are great goal scorers making? And you got this guy in a team-friendly deal for 4 more years. There's no way in hell you trade that guy.
Don't forget Phil Kessel, Tyler Seguin.
Oh, God.
Joe Thornton. Like, you can't go down. That can't happen anymore. Right. Like, you have to keep these guys. And I know Kessel, whatever. But like Sagan, you can't have a guy here. And well, the only reason why I say Marchand, he's early 30s. He's here for like that's somebody I think you can get a haul for, and that people recognize in a big name around the NHL. But I only trade him if you're getting a goalie that's not Tukaras, that is a top 5 type goaltender.
But here's the thing: do you trade him if you're trying to stay at the top, or do you trade him for a rebuild? I think it's the second of the two. If you're going to trade Marchand, who is one of the better forwards in the league, he's an all-star, he's played on the top line for the Canadian Olympic hockey team, he's obviously one of those guys that's respected around the league and a guy you want. If you trade Marchand, yeah, you'll get a bunch back for him, but you're not going to go far in the playoffs. You're basically waving the white flag and saying, we're taking a step back. That you don't make that trade unless you're committed to rebuilding.
Yep. You don't do that deal unless you're rebuilding. So that's the thing. Like, it really, this whole entire thing starts with Rask. What do they want to do with Rask? If they want him back, and if he's back, I'm sure everybody will say, all right, well, you know, what happened in the playoffs? Let's have him back. It's just going to be hard to sell to the fans. But, hey, if you want another kick at the can, he's what you have, and there's no one else that they could get that could even compete with what he has.
617-779-0985. We'll take a break here, and when we come back, we will focus on the NBA playoffs. The Celtics lead Toronto 2-0. We'll tell you what's going on in the other Eastern Conference semifinal. And another great game late last night, in case you missed it, out in the West. And Joe's not happy with the reffing. And I don't know what the lines were. I mean, you can tell me what the lines were when we came back. But the referees had a big hand in both games. We'll discuss that next. 98.5 The Sports Zone.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Coming up next at 10, Sports Talk, while you're on the clock. Zolak and Bertrand. Right now, it's Tusher and Rich on Boston's Home for Sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Coming up at 7 o'clock, we'll have our weekly segment with the Bankroll Boys. Dan Lifschatz is here, and he's pacing like a caged animal already. This should be fun. Does Dan know he's staying around for two segments?
He does.
He does know that. Okay. Just making sure.
He knows now.
I didn't want to blindside him.
You kind of did.
Okay. So we're going to do a little something extra with the Bankroll Boys this morning. So that's coming up at 7 o'clock. But let's get back to the NBA playoffs. Celtics off last night, but they do play late this afternoon. 5 o'clock pregame, 5:30 tip right here on your flagship radio station for the Patriots. Patriots, too. 98.5, the Sports Hub. Celtics leading Toronto 2-0. Game 3 tonight. Last night, game 3 between Milwaukee and Miami. And this game was decided in the last 15 seconds of the game. Miami up 3, Milwaukee with the basketball after a horrendous Jimmy Butler turnover in his own end. And Chris Middleton rose up about 3 steps behind the 3-point arc to take a 3-point shot. Goran Dragic, staying vertical, kind of bumped him a little bit on the way up, submarined him a little bit, and the referees called a foul. Middleton made all 3 shots to tie the game. Miami has the last possession. They run the clock down. The ball goes to Jimmy Butler in the corner. He takes a 3 at the buzzer, missed the shot, and the referees call a foul on Giannis Antetokounmpo, who put a hand on him. Didn't touch his elbow, didn't touch his body. Giannis was sure to stay to Butler's side as he took the shot, but put his hand on Butler's back. On the way by, the referees call the touch foul. Jimmy Butler makes 2 free throws with no time left. Miami 116, Milwaukee 114. They now lead 2-0. And to give Giannis credit after the game, he was okay with it.
I haven't seen the play. I got to go watch the play again. I'm trying to make it tough for Jimmy. You know, the ref said that there was contact there. Maybe there was. I got to watch the play. You know, it is what it is. Tried to contest the shot, but he said there was a contact there. So it is what it is. I got to watch the play.
Terrible, terrible call both ways. Terrible call on one end, and then the referees made up for it by making just an atrocious call on the other end. And Jimmy Butler, who made the 2 free throws at the end, was absolutely positive he was fouled on the play.
ISO, Gorm made a hell of a pass on inbound, and then just wait for the clock to go out, step back jumper, and I got fouled, pushed me in the back. Can't deny that. And then I knew I had to make 1 out of 2. So, you know, ended up, I think I made both of them, and we win.
Yeah, congratulations. Mm-hmm. By the way, if I'm a Miami fan and I saw the way Jimmy Butler acted in the second half, he looked like a deer in headlights. He was great in game 1. He was not great last night. These 2 free throws really bailed him out because he was a non-factor in the second half of that game. But more to the refereeing, Joe Murray. The wrangle in full effect last night.
The actual meaning of the wrangle was more in effect in the second game, which we can get to.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right. When Butler was in the game, that's when Milwaukee got back in the game. When he was on the bench, that's kind of when the Heat were doing their thing. But there was something that there was some real bad basketball there at some points. There was no timeout called when you needed it.
Miami choked a sure lead away in the last 5 minutes.
How does Butler get into the corner and not call a timeout if you're there in that situation?
We're talking about the horrendous turnover now. The turnover made that went to
Brook Lopez.
Miami had one timeout. They were up, I think it was three or four at the time.
Up three?
Yeah, they were up three at the time. That's the turnover that gave Middleton the three that he was fouled on.
And
Milwaukee's picking up full court. They throw a pass into the corner for some reason for Butler. He's trapped, and instead of calling a timeout, he just launched the ball back in the middle of the floor where Brook Lopez is waiting and converted it into a layup.
Now, John, you played basketball in your lifetime. Not NBA level,
I know a thing or two.
I was Catholic Suburban League champions.
I've watched a few
back
games.
Back in 2000. Sure. But when the ball goes into the corner, they call it the old diamond press.
Yeah.
Come on, everybody. If you play any basketball, you double team in the corner, right?
Yes.
If you get trapped, what do? You call timeout. You call timeout. You're Jimmy Butler. Now, he did think he was going to get fouled. He didn't. But, like, that's all on him.
If you're 15, you
quickly,
call timeout.
Giannis, he is let off the hook way too easily.
Yeah.
He's the best player in the NBA, the best defensive player. He gets let off the hook way too much.
I agree.
He should be crushed today for what happened in that game yesterday. Going down 2-0 and you had a shot? He should be crushed today.
And Milwaukee really did not play well.
No, and they kept letting Brook Lopez shoot, which was wildly awful. I mean, he kept hitting the top of the backboard. But how do you feel about the Celtics? Because I don't fear either of these teams.
I fear Miami. I fear Miami a lot.
Milwaukee
was going to wake up
last night.
No, if Milwaukee was going to wake up, I figured it would have been last night, and Miami just played much better. Sorry to cut you off. We got one more thing to get to before we get to 7 o'clock. Out west, the Houston Rockets played game 7 against Oklahoma City. It came down to one play. Lou Dort, who had 27 points for Oklahoma City, had a 3-point shot at the buzzer. James Harden, of all people, blocked it, and Houston moves on.
I've been locked in, obviously, just all year long, trying to be better on that side of the ball. Tonight was a huge emphasis on it, and so came up with the big block to win the game. And just trying to be engaged as much as possible. Offensively, I had a rough shooting night, you know, turned the ball over a little bit too much, but tried to find other ways to impact the game and came up with a huge block to end the game.
It's the third game 7 in the last 2 or 3 years. James Harden has just been awful.
He was
terrible again last night. But he bailed his team out, made a really good defensive play, and Houston goes to play the Lakers.
I have a beef on that. Like, the way you just set it up was, oh, yeah, James Harden made a great play and they win. No. There was way more than that. He made that play, right? He ends up missing free throws. And what happened was Oklahoma City had a chance to win the game, and Scott Foster called a foul.
Yeah.
On James Harden, which gave them a free throw, and Gallinari misses it.
And that's the wrangle. Scott Foster.
Where did that come from?
Yep.
Scott Foster's on the other side of the world. He literally was on the other side of the court. And what's funny was Foster goes, nope, it's Houston ball. It's Houston ball. And Chris Paul's having a conniption. A literal conniption on the court. They review it, and they call a foul on, dude, wrangle. Did you know that the Houston Rockets were 0-7 in playoff games officiated by Scott Foster and James Harden? And before the game, do I have to remind you that Chris Paul and Scott Foster were talking about it before the game? Scott Foster and Chris Paul were like, oh man, you've had my number for years, man. Literally, the discussion before the game. We must talk about this.
I know. We got to get away from it for now, because the Bankroll Boys are next. Dan Lifschatz, Joe Murray, get your betting slips out. We will talk about it in a second. 1 hour down, 3 to go here. Thursday edition of the Toucher and Rich program. John Wallach, Joe Murray, Mike Lockhart here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.